All right, guys, welcome back to the Game Trail Podcast. It's me, your host, Trail Kreitzer. Hopefully you guys find some use in this episode. It's kind of based on just a bunch of questions I've been getting lately. It feels like as that weather starts to turn and those tag results start to come back, you know, I've had a little luck. I got my results in Colorado today for moose. Unfortunately, that is not the tag that I drew. Hopefully in the next few days, the following results for mule deer and elk will come through, and I'm really hoping to find my name next to successful for an elk tag. But with that, it's just that time of year where it feels like people are trying to get outdoors, start to do some scouting. Now's a great time to start to explore your units, get out there on the ground and just get boots on the ground and, you know, even hang some trail cameras. I know that for states that allow you to hang trail cameras, it can be a really good resourceful tool to kind of help you target a buck or a bull, primarily a buck. And maybe if you got an antelope tag, I think they can be extremely useful on a water hole. But yeah, I mean, it's just that time of year, and it's also kind of camping season. It feels like anytime that weather starts to turn, people want to get out and, you know, go do some camping and do some scouting. And as part of that, I thought it would be useful to maybe answer some of the questions I get and just kind of do a rundown on sleep systems. So when I'm talking about sleep systems, I'm primarily talking sleeping pads, sleeping bags, maybe a pillow if you use one, and then, you know, shelters and tents. And I get a ton of questions on this. I was in the gear shop maybe a week ago, had a customer in there that was asking some questions. It sounded like he's drawn a high country mule deer tag in Nevada. And he was trying to just understand what it is that he should be taking in terms of shelter and kind of the pros and cons of each. And I just been getting a bunch of DMs as well. People asking a lot of questions about sleeping pads and bags and shelters. And it just seems like it's that time of year when people want to get out. And so hopefully I'm going to run through a bunch of those questions, kind of run through a deep dive on things like R value in a sleeping pad or what a fill power rating is in a sleeping bag. You know, maybe give you some pros and cons of down versus synthetic. And then cover some shelters and what I think are probably some of the best shelters, depending on the tag that you drew and the terrain and the environment and even the time of year that you're hunting. Those are all considerations that you need to make. So it's going to be a solo episode, probably be about an hour, and hopefully run through a bunch of information that you guys will find useful. Before I get going, I want to hit you with a promo code GAMETRAIL. You can use that when you sign up for a Go Hunt Insider account. If you do that, we're going to give you $50 back to the Go Hunt Gear Shop. That's $50 that you can use towards the purchase of any gear that you want in the shop, including new sleep system items. So maybe you've been eyeing a new sleeping pad or pillow, or, you know, maybe even putting that towards a sleeping bag. You can do that. So sign up, use that promo code GAMETRAIL, and we'll get you hooked up with $50. You also get an insider account. And there still is a bunch of time to do some research and still find a permit. I know I heard through the grapevine, the mutual friend of Chris Porter's and mine hasn't had any luck in the draws. He's kind of scrambling and looking for opportunities to still get a chance to go hunting. And, you know, hopefully we're going to have him on the Big Hunt Guys podcast here in the next couple of weeks. And he'll get a chance to ask some of his questions on what to do if you haven't drawn a tag, if you haven't procured a tag to get a chance to go hunting. And there's still a ton of opportunity, and you can use your insider research account to really find those hunts that you may not even know existed. And that's kind of like my favorite thing about that insider platform. I think that's probably, you know, the sales pitch, quote unquote sales pitch that, you know, I've given people when I have a chance to do a full demo of that product. And it's true. I mean, it really will open your eyes to hunt possibilities that you probably didn't even know existed. So get yourself an insider research account. Also, I should say, if you want to use that promo code GAMETRAIL on any items in the gear shop, you can get 10% off. So that's a saving if you're already an insider. And then lastly, before I dive deep into the subject at hand, I'd like to thank my sponsor, Matthews. Matthews Archery has been kind enough to sponsor my podcast. I was out shooting this morning. I'm getting ready to go on a bear hunt. In fact, I leave tomorrow morning. So I fly out at 6 a.m. out of Vegas tomorrow. So I am, you know, running the candle at both ends. I think I'll probably get up and leave here maybe about 2 o'clock in the morning and drive down there, catch flight to Alaska to hunt black bear and do some fishing. And I'm taking my Matthews bow and shot great today. Check my sight tape. Everything is dialed. Strings haven't moved. Everything feels good. And that Matthews lift for 2024 is a phenomenal bow. So I would highly suggest, if you haven't, run up to a pro shop and shoot one and see what you think. I think you'd be pleasantly surprised with what an easy bow that is to shoot. So once again, thank you to Matthews. So with that, I'm going to dive into sleep systems. I'm going to start and kind of run through the various parts and pieces of what I would consider, you know, kind of a sleep system. I would suggest that I'm primarily talking sleeping pad, sleeping bag, and then also your shelter. And that's kind of your sleep system. And I think all together for a backpack hunt, you probably end that right around, I would say, 5 pounds. You might be a little bit less depending on the individual items that you choose. But I think right around that 4-5 pound mark is probably where you're going to end up landing for most backpack hunts throughout the year. Certainly, if you get later into the year and you're packing a stove and maybe one of the larger floorless teepee type shelters, you can split the weight with a buddy and you may end up with a little bit more weight than that. But that's kind of that, you know, that benchmark is of what I'm kind of shooting for typically. So with that, I'm going to start with sleeping pads. And, you know, this gentleman was in the gear shop. He had some questions about sleeping pads as well. You know, I get a lot of questions about sleeping pads, which one I recommend. And I'm going to touch on that at the end of this and maybe give you guys some options, both for kind of the creme de la creme, the items that I think are probably the best of the best, and then also maybe some more economical options that I still think are really good pads. So with that, I'll run through sleeping pads. Generally, as a rule of thumb, most backpack hunters are going to opt for an inflatable air mattress over a filled foam or a, you know, like a dense foam mattress. You guys are probably used to, if you've lived as long as I have, those self-inflating air mattresses that kind of had a, you know, a piece of foam in it. As you'd open up the valve, they would kind of inflate with air. Those were super comfortable. And I remember those being popular, but they definitely were not the lightest. You know, those closed cell foam pads like a Therm-a-Rest Z-Rest, I've used those and they're not the most comfortable by any means. They're kind of that eggshell shape looking material. And, you know, they offer you a little bit of comfort, but overall they are just not that comfortable. And so most backpack hunters, myself included, are using these inflatable air mattresses, and they're doing so primarily because they're comfortable. They're lightweight and they compress to a much smaller package inside your pack. And if you're doing a multi-day hunt, you know, 5 to maybe 8, 10 days backpacking, space within your backpack is a premium. And that's one of the major advantages of those pads. For me, the pad I'm going to choose for backpacking is going to be typically right around that 1 pound mark. And like I said, that is one of the features of these inflatable air mattresses. They are relatively lightweight. The weight of those, it might be a smidge heavier if I'm going on a late season hunt and I need a little bit of more insulation, but normally it's going to be right around that 1 pound mark. That's kind of what I'm shooting for. I could go lighter. There are some options on the market that are lighter. Maybe that Therm-a-Rest Neo Air. I think it's called the Uber Light, super lightweight pad, lightweight material. That's certainly an option. Doesn't offer you a lot of insulation, but you can go lighter. There's also pads on the market that are half or three quarter length. Some of you guys maybe have seen some of the skeletonized looking sleeping pads that have the big open holes or sections within that pad. And they primarily try to target the parts of your body where you're going to impact it. I've used those. I haven't had good luck with them. I don't personally find that they're very comfortable. Mostly what I'm looking for is a pad that is relatively lightweight, but is also comfortable and durable. And I'm going to touch on that more here in a sec. You know, mostly what I'm looking for, like I said, is I'm looking for a pad that's going to offer me full body coverage. I want that pad to be long enough that my heels aren't hanging off. I know Brady likes a shorter pad and he'll use his backpack to lay his calves and like his ankles on too. And he does that primarily to save weight. I'm not that guy. I like a full length pad that offers me complete coverage. And I just feel like I sleep better. Also in the shoulder width, I want that thing wide enough that my elbows are not hanging off. So if I'm a back sleeper, which I am, back and a side sleeper, I would say, I want that thing wide enough that my elbows aren't going to hang off the edge of the pad. I've tried narrower pads and I just don't think that they're that comfortable for me. So although I could go a smidge lighter to save weight, I think the overall dimensions of the pad should fit your body. And I really do believe that you'll probably sleep better. Talking about comfort. So when inflated, you know, the footprint of your mat matters. So basically that way that thing looks, and I already kind of touched on it. But pads are normally sold in maybe a couple different sizes. They're typically going to be 72 inches in length, or maybe 78 or 77 inches in length for the long size. They're also often sold in two different widths. Some companies may make some that are extra wide. So if you're a wide shouldered, you know, bigger bodied dude, you might want to look for even a wider pad, but mostly they're going to be either 20 inches wide or 25 inches wide. I'm not a super broad shouldered guy. I am 6'2", maybe 190 pounds. And like I said, I do like the wider version because it offers me that coverage for my shoulders and my elbows. So I like a pad that's 25 inches wide. And like I said, I'm about 6'2". So I typically err on the pad that is longer. So that's 77 or 78 inches. The shape of the sleeping pads are mostly either rectangular shaped or mummy shaped. My preference has been kind of a mummy shaped pad. And, you know, they also make a lot of options on the market that are rectangular shaped. And in my opinion, you know, those rectangular shaped pads, you're really just adding weight that you're unlikely to need or even use near the foot of the pad. You know, I think most people, myself included, were probably primarily side sleepers or maybe back sleepers. I don't know many people that sleep on inflatable backpacking air mattresses on their stomach. That'd be interesting. Yeah, maybe there are people out there that do. I certainly am not. I can't do that for whatever reason. It's just not that all that comfortable. So I am mostly a back or a side sleeper. And I think most people probably are when it comes to inflatable air mattresses. And, you know, if you think about a rectangular shaped air mattress, you really do probably have a bunch of space down there at the bottom that you're not really using. So that's why I like those mummy pads. You save some weight and they're still going to fit your body. The thickness of the pad is something that I get asked a lot about. And it's common for guys to reach out and say that they're having, you know, maybe they have trouble sleeping due to comfort and they're looking for a comfortable air mattress. Most mattresses are going to be in that 2.5 to 3 inches thick. But generally in order to keep that weight down, you know, they may use lighter material if it gets more thick than that, which I found that those lighter materials are not quite as durable as I need. And durability, which I'll touch on here in a second, is definitely something that you want to think about when you're buying a sleeping pad. You know, the thickness of the pad, I think it's a little bit less important depending on how the pad is constructed. And what I mean that by that is that I found that horizontal baffles, so those baffles that go horizontal across the pad, they tend to more uniformly support your body, especially your hips, which are kind of that pivot point that are going to kind of push into the ground, and maybe your shoulders. And I've personally found that those horizontal baffles, regardless of the thickness of the air pad, they tend to support my body over the whole a whole lot better. And I found that they're a lot more comfortable. A lot of people have probably seen these quilted type pattern air mattresses. I think those also do a pretty good job at supporting your body. What I found is I don't really like the air mattresses that have the long vertical baffles. And kind of the reason that I haven't had such great luck with them is because I just don't find them that comfortable. They kind of have a tendency to roll kind of up on the edges if you're a side sleeper. And, you know, if you think about it, you're a side sleeper, those vertical baffles, they don't really necessarily offer the support across your body as a whole. And I found that they don't really support me that well, and I don't tend to sleep that well on those. I know people that do like them. I've tried many, many sleep pads, and I can tell you that for me, I much prefer the horizontal baffles or the quilted options. So something worth thinking about. You know, for guys that are really looking for a super plush, you know, thick pad, there are some on the market. Sea to Summit makes a series of pads that are lightweight backpacking style pads that are 4 inches thick. So I would take a look at those if you're looking for, you know, maximum, you know, depth on an air mattress. Big Agnes also makes some super thick plush style air mattresses. So if you're a bigger guy, if you're a guy that sleeps on his side and you're really looking for maximum comfort, I would suggest that you maybe take a look at those two options. But really, I kind of err on that side of maybe 2.5, 3 inches thick. And like I said, that horizontal baffles is kind of the biggest difference to me in how well it supports your body and how comfortable it is. Next, jumping down to durability. As a general rule, the thicker materials comprising the laminate shell are measured in what they call denier, which is a higher number would indicate the thicker, more dense material. So the highest denier that we typically see in backpack sleeping pads is going to be around 75D, and 15D is probably going to be the thinnest. And as you might, you know, be able to tell, the thicker it is, the heavier it's going to be, but also the more durable it's going to be. So inflatable air mattresses are not nearly as durable as closed foam pads, but they weigh a heck of a lot less. And for me, that's an exchange I'm willing to make. One area I look at in terms of ability is the valve. That's where I've probably had the most issues with inflatable air pads. I typically have not had holes, whether they're puncture holes or a seam splitting. You know, I've had buddies that certainly have, which kind of ruin their weekend. But typically the issues I have is with the valve leaking. And I know from having tested a bunch of different air pads that I much prefer the air mattresses that have the twist lock mechanisms as the valve. The durability of an inflatable pad, it mostly depends on, you know, how it's taken care of. You know, if you take care of the valve, if you're careful with it, I think you have good luck with it. But that's typically, you know, the biggest issue is how you take care of that. I will say, in terms of valves, the ones that I've had the least luck with are those that are kind of a rubber closure. It's almost like a flap that you push in and it kind of seals it off. You kind of flip that open, blow into it to open it, to fill it up. And then you do the same to let the air out. And those types of valves I've not had good luck with. For whatever reason, it feels like they leak to me. It's not uncommon with one of those types of air mattresses where I wake up in the morning and that thing's mostly flat, or even in the middle of the night. So if you're looking for, you know, a durable pad that's going to stay inflated, I would look towards those more durable, hardy twist lock valves. Going back to how you take care of a sleeping pad, because like I said, I don't necessarily think that the materials themselves are not durable. A lot of the issues are primarily due to us mishandling them or not taking care of them. So I did want to touch on a few things there. So a few notes in regards to durability. So on hot early season hunts, you need to make sure that you let some air out of that mattress before you leave for the day. Because essentially what happens is as that air heats up during the day within those baffles, the baffles will expand. And I've seen seams split due to that happening, especially on those early season hot weather hunts. So whether you're hunting early season mule deer in a dry state like Nevada, maybe you're out just kind of truck camping, you know, hunting antelope, and you're still using your inflatable air mattress, you definitely got to let some air out before you leave for that day, and let your mattress sit in the hot sun, because it will expand and it will split those seams. Secondly, I never put my air mattress down on the bare ground. I'm really careful about that. Even when I'm inflating it, you know, I make sure that I put down a ground cloth, or I set up my tent, and then I'm going to blow that air pad up inside it. You know, if I am bivy camping, I'll typically put my air pad within the bivy, so inside the bivy, before I blow it up. And that's really just to provide a layer of protection between the air mattress and the ground. The other thing that I always do is I always clear my camping spot. So, you know, I'll take 5 or 10 minutes and dig it out, make sure that I got no sharp rocks, no sticks, no cactus spines, nothing that's going to potentially poke a hole in my air mattress. The other thing that you got to be aware of in regards to like durability and taking care of your air pad, it's really common for guys that get back to camp, they're tired, they got all their gear on, maybe you got your backpack on, or, you know, maybe you got your hip quiver still mounted, and I'm speaking from, you know, experience here, and you might just want to plop down on your air mattress inside your tent, take your boots off, and kind of start to get yourself situated for the evening. And, you know, I've known cases where guys have sat down with gear on, either attached to their belt or their backpack, and they've punched a hole in their air mattress. So these are just like little things. And I think typically, as long as you take care of your air pad and you're really hyper-vigilant about where you put it, where you blow it up, you know, making sure that you let some air out during a hot day, I think it's going to give you really good service over a lot of years. I'll touch on the end, but I've got two air mattresses from a certain brand, certain type that I think I've had them for about 9 years now, I want to say. And I've been using those two pads the entire time. And I think as long as you take care of them, you won't have any issues with durability. You just really have to be hyper vigilant with those. And, you know, you want to make sure that you don't get a hole in it, because if you do, it can really ruin your hunt. If you can't get any sleep because you don't have an air pad, it's really uncomfortable just laying right on the ground. The other thing in regards to durability is I would highly suggest that you always pack a repair kit. So, you know, pack a sealed nylon patch with an adhesive back. And then also it pays to pack, whether it's in your truck, maybe you got to, you know, dive out back to your truck to repair your sleeping pad, or maybe you even pack it in your backpack if you want to. But those little tubes of silicone gel, those can be used to seal up a hole. And, you know, I've done that. It's been a while, but I've done it and it's held and it's done really well. So I think that's a nice little piece of gear to have in your truck or even on your, in your pack, just to repair, you know, a tear in, you know, a tent, a rain fly, or in your sleeping pad. Next thing about sleeping pads, I get asked a lot is, you know, do you need an insulated sleeping pad? You know, how much does it help? And if you look through the spec sheet of an individual air mattress within our Go Hunt gear shop or any gear shop, you're going to see people talking about R value. You're going to definitely see it noted in the specs rundown for any individual pad in a gear shop. So the R value, it gets thrown around, but essentially what the R value is it's the resistance to losing body heat to the ground below. So the equation is actually linear, meaning that a pad with an R value of 3 is 3 times better at resisting heat loss from your body to the ground than a pad with an R value of 1. So it's an insulation layer essentially that keeps you up off the ground, and it helps you retain body heat at night as you're sleeping. And, you know, your sleep system, it's a combination as far as staying warm. It's a combination really of, you know, your sleeping pad and your sleeping bag. It's not one or the other, you know, totally on its own. Those have to kind of work in conjunction, and you have to have a selection that is going to meet the demands of the hunt that you're going on, both for, you know, the sleeping pad and your sleeping bag. So I wanted to run through R value and kind of what is recommended for R value. So an R value of like 1 to 1.5, there's really no insulation properties. It's going to offer you some cushion and some comfort, but it's not really going to insulate you from the ground. And really the only time that you might use something like that is on a really hot weather hunt. So those warm summer nights, I can think of an antelope tag that I had in Nevada a number of years ago. And, you know, that sleeping pad with an R value of essentially 1, was perfect. You know, I didn't need any insulation, and I was really trying to stay cool at night as hot as it was. But that's really the only time that you'd be looking at that. It's a pretty rare case when you would be looking at a mattress with that kind of R value. An R value of maybe 2 to 2.5. This has got just very basic insulation. It provides a little bit of warmth, and it's still really probably best in warm temperatures, probably somewhere over 65 degrees. So maybe those summer scouting in those really arid states, maybe Utah, Southern Utah, or Nevada, Arizona, maybe those areas where you don't really see cold weather, especially in the summer months, or maybe even those early season archery hunts, whether it's mule deer or elk. Our value of like 3 to 3.5, it's a pretty solid insulation level. And it's often warm enough for really 3-season backpacking and camping. And you're really looking at temperature ranges between maybe 35 and 60 degrees. Although, you know, if you're a cold sleeper, you know, you may want to bump that R value up a little bit more. And most air mattresses are really going to have an R value of kind of within that range, maybe 3, 3.5 to 4. And with one of those pads, you're probably going to be able to do 90% of the hunting that you would find out west. You know, maybe you get into those late season hunts and you're just using a traditional style tent. Maybe you're not using a stove in conjunction with that. You know, at that point, you may want to jump up your R value and get an insulated pad that's going to offer you more protection, more warmth at night. But really, for the most part, most people ought to be looking at a range of maybe that 3 to 4 range for R value. And you could do almost everything. So if you're looking for like that one buy once, cry once option, that's probably where you land. Our value of like 4, 4.5 to 5, you know, it's almost getting good enough for winter. You're kind of bumping into those late fall months. It's really probably pretty close to getting to that. But I think if you're a guy that's really hunting those late season hunts, you may want to look at an R value that's even greater than that. So maybe 5 to 10 R values. And I don't know if I've ever seen one that is 10. There probably is. But any of those pads that have a sleeping rating R value of 5 or above, those are going to be warm enough for winter use. And, you know, you're talking really sub-freezing, super cold conditions. You know, very few sleeping pads have an R value over 6, although there are some, you know, those heavy duty base camping style sleeping pads, but generally speaking, you don't see a lot that are over 6. So most of them are going to be in that window of, you know, 3 to maybe 4, 4.5. And that's kind of the best window for most people for most of the camping that you're doing. And, you know, buying a insulated air mattress, really all you're giving up is maybe a little bit of weight over an air mattress that has a lower R value and a thinner material. It's not like you're going to sleep hotter. It's just really going to insulate you from losing heat on those colder weather hunts. So think about R value. Try to pair your R value up with most of the hunting that you're doing. And like I said, I think as long as you guys are mostly falling within that 3 to 5 window for R value, you're going to cover pretty much everything that you need. I get asked this question quite a bit, so I wanted to address it. I talk to a lot of people that are just super annoyed that they have to inflate these air mattresses. And some of them take a lot of breath. You know, it can take you 5 minutes to blow that thing up. And it seems like at the end of the day, that's the last thing that you want to do. They do make little battery operated inflatable fans that essentially allow you to inflate your air mattress, and they will do so relatively quickly, and they weigh less than a couple ounces. I think for guys that are really annoyed with inflating their air mattresses, it's a great option. Go for it. The way I look at it, it's 2 ounces that I don't actually need really in my backpack. It's a minor convenience, if you will, in my mind. And really, you know, at the end of a day and you've been out hunting, what else do you got to do? So for me, I've never really minded blowing up my air mattress. It's a minor annoyance, and one that I would prefer to leave the mechanism for inflating my pad at home, leave the 2 ounces and simply just, you know, take the time, enjoy the time in the field and just blow up your air mattress. So with that, I'm going to give you my recommendation for an air pad. And, you know, if you've watched any of my gear review videos or any of the bag dump videos that I've ever done, you're going to have seen this pad in my gear dump, because it's really the only pad that I use anymore. Like I said, I've been using it for a lot of years. Prior to that, I had several that I didn't really have the best luck with. And since I've been using this thing, it works really well. So with that, my recommendation for sleeping pad is going to be the Therm-a-Rest Neo Air X-Lite. And the reason why is because it's 3 inches thick, so it's plenty thick, offers a ton of comfort. It's a mummy shape. It has horizontal baffles. It's got an R value of 4.5, which is plenty of insulation for, you know, all the hunting I do, early season archery, clear into, you know, October, maybe even November, to be honest. And if I'm using that thing in conjunction with a stove and a floorless shelter, it's got all the insulation I need. Weight is primarily one of the big reasons that I love this pad. So the long wide version of that air mattress, which is going to be 77 inches by 25, I believe, it only weighs 1 pound, 1 ounce. The valve on that thing is a twist lock valve. I've never had any issues whatsoever with the valve on that thing, where I've had plenty of issues on other sleeping pads that have those little flip ones with the rubber thing that kind of seals them off. I haven't had good luck with those. If there is a downside to that sleeping pad, I would tell you that it is a little bit loud. It's a little bit crinkly. I think I've heard it explained. I don't know if I heard it somewhere or if it's just what I've kind of passed on, but kind of sounds like crinkling up a potato chip bag sometimes if you're rolling around on that thing. So if you're an active sleeper and you're a light sleeper, you might find the sound of that sleeping pad slightly annoying. Personally, once I get in my sleeping bag, I'm laying on top of that. I haven't really noticed any issues as far as sound goes. I can't say that I've ever been woken up by the sound of the air mattress. So it's my favorite. I think it's probably the best backpacking air mattress out there. And if you look at a lot of gear reviews, whether it's, you know, Gear Junkie or, you know, some of these through hiking websites, it's highly recommended. There are options. The insulated version of that is kind of a silver color. It's a more heavily insulated pad. It's the exact same pad. It's just got more insulation. There is also the Uber Light one, which is the lightweight version. It's a much more thin material, not insulated nearly as much as the X-Lite. And it's an option maybe for guys that are really looking to scrape some ounces and, you know, go ultra lightweight. But like I said, I just think that the Neo Air X-Lite is kind of middle of the road. If you've ever seen it, it's kind of a mummy shape. It's got those horizontal baffles, and it's kind of a light yellow color, kind of a weird color, I think, for an air mattress. But that's the one that has been my go-to. If you're looking for an option that's maybe a little bit more budget-friendly, because that pad from Therm-a-Rest is quite expensive. I mean, it's a couple hundred bucks plus. I think it's a good investment as long as you take care of it. Like I said, I've had good use out of mine. But if you are looking for a more economical version, I think you ought to take a look at the climate pads. The climate pads are far cheaper. They're a comfortable pad, and I think they have a good valve. I haven't had any issues with those leaking, the ones that I've played with. I think it's a really nice sleeping pad for the money. And I would suggest maybe taking a look at that Static V as an option if you're looking to save some bucks and get a good inflatable sleeping pad. Next, I'm going to jump down to sleeping bags. And I get a lot of questions about sleeping bags. Probably the most common question that I get about sleeping bags is down or synthetic. So for 90% plus of the hunting situations that I think most people are going to face, I would suggest a down sleeping bag. So down sleeping bags, they insulate better. They're lighter weight. They can pack much smaller, which I've already said space is a premium in your backpack on a backpack hunt. It is more expensive than a synthetic sleeping bag, and you absolutely have to keep a down bag dry. Even bags that I see marketed as being treated for, you know, being waterproof, essentially the down is treated. I think that there may be some truth to that. I'm not fully convinced. I should say I'm a bit of a skeptic when it comes to that. So I would suggest, regardless of whether your down is treated or not, if it's down, you have to keep that bag dry for it to insulate properly. The only time that I would personally recommend a synthetic sleeping bag is when you might be hunting in extremely wet environments. And even then, like on an Alaskan sheep hunt, I still think a down bag is probably a better option because of the weight savings and being able to compact it in your backpack. I personally don't think that there is any reason that you can't keep a down bag dry. They sell dry bag storage sacks, compression sacks. They sell pack rainfly covers. If you're backpack hunting, you've probably got some sort of shelter, you know, whether that's a tent or a tarp or whatever it might be. Typically, I can't think of any reason why you shouldn't be able to keep your down bag dry. And personally, I just think that they insulate a lot better. They're more comfortable and, you know, they weigh a lot less. And I just think it's a better option. You know, perhaps there are hunts where it is essentially just a downpour day in and day out. That's really the only reason I would ever suggest that you maybe take a look at a synthetic bag, because above and beyond that, I just think down is so much superior an option, but you do have to keep it dry. So let's talk about down. What is fill power? This is a question I get quite a bit. What's the fill power mean? So if you're looking through the specs sheet on a down sleeping bag, one of the specs that you're going to see is the fill power rating. So the fill power, it's a number that indicates the the relative quality of the down. And that number comes from a lab test where what they're going to do is they're going to measure how many cubic inches of loft 1 ounce of that down fill produces. So it's essentially a measure of how lofty that down is. Higher filled down numbers, they indicate a greater loft and a better insulating efficiency. And it's important to note that down fill power, it doesn't tell you how warm a sleeping bag really is going to be per se, because it's also a measure of the fill weight on how warm that is. But it is going to give you an indication on how well it insulates. So the key to down's warmth is really it's the formation of these air spaces that are in between the individual down clusters, if you will. So if you can imagine a more high quality lofty down, you're going to have more dead air space trapped between those clusters. And that is really providing you the insulation and the warmth for that sleeping bag. So the higher the fill power, the more heat is going to be trapped in those spaces. And essentially, the less down you can use, and you can also achieve a temperature rating that is equal or better than you might get from a lower fill power. Hopefully, I explained that right. It's typically measured when you look at a spec sheet. I would say that the most common fill power ratings are going to be 850 plus, which is a real high quality down. And the other that you most commonly see is going to be a 650 fill. Now, two bags that are rated at 15 degrees, maybe you have a 650 fill bag rated to 15 degrees and a 850 plus fill bag that is rated to 15 degrees. That bag that is the 650 fill is going to have to use more down to achieve a warmer temperature rating because it's not trapping as much dead air space as that higher fill power bag. That's why those higher fill power bags are lighter weight, because essentially you can put less down in them and achieve a similar or a same temperature rating as that those heavier bags, because they happen to use more fill. The more fill power rating in a sleeping bag for the down, the more expensive it's going to be. You're really paying for the loftiness of that bag. And that's probably the biggest distinction in bags like a Western Mountaineering that, you know, you might be over $500 versus a lower quality bag from a company, you know, like Climate, or, you know, maybe even some of the options from Big Agnes. That's really what you're paying for. You're paying for that high quality down. And I will say, in my opinion, I think that a sleeping bag is one of the best investments that you can make in hunting. And you guys probably get sick of me saying that because I say it about a lot of gear, whether it's optics or, you know, boots, whatever it might be. But I really do believe that a sleeping bag is one of those pieces of gear that you can purchase once. And if you buy right, you buy a high quality sleeping bag with a super good high fill power rating, you're going to have that bag forever. I mean, I've got a Western Mountaineering bag, you know, that I've probably had, I want to say it's about probably 15 years at this point. I've got a Marmot Helium down bag, which I'm going to touch on a little bit later. That's an 800 fill power rating in that sleeping bag. I think I probably had that thing for close to 20 years. That was one of the, probably the, you know, splurges back in the day when, you know, I was right out of college and didn't have a ton of money, but I wanted a decent sleeping bag. As long as you're not compressing your sleeping bag and storing it completely compressed, you know, those sleeping bags are going to give you decades and decades worth of use as long as you take care of it. So I really do think that a sleeping bag is an item in your hunting kit that you should spend good money on. And I think it's going to give you really good value. It's not like, you know, a new archery sight, or, you know, even a new bow. Those come out every year, you know, and we all kind of get pressured, or, you know, we look into maybe buying a new bow because it's a little bit faster. You know, it's a little bit more quieter. You know, and there's some truth to that. But as far as like those gains, they're kind of only marginal, but sleeping bags don't really change. You know, you buy a high quality, high fill power rated bag that is warm, is comfortable. That thing, there hasn't really been any crazy advancements in sleeping bags over the years. So if you buy that thing, you're probably going to end up using that same bag for decades. So I think you got to spend your money on a good sleeping bag, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Going into temperature rating, choose a sleeping bag that's rated to have a little bit lower rating than what the typical temperatures are that you anticipate on your hunting trips. So sleeping bags temperature ratings are, they're identified as the lowest temperature at which a bag was designed to keep an average sleeper warm. And often the bag, if you look at the specs, they may list a couple of different ratings. So they may list a comfort rating, and a comfort rating is the lowest temperature at which the bag will keep your average cold sleeper comfortable. So if you're a cold sleeper, I'm a cold sleeper. That comfort rating is kind of an indication of the limit that it's going to keep a guy like me who's a cold sleeper comfortable. The limit rating is the lowest temperature at which the bag will keep a warm sleeper comfortable. So if you're a cold sleeper and you're looking at that limit rating, you may get out there and find yourself cold, which I've certainly done, and I don't recommend it. Typically, like I said, I would suggest that you maybe buy a sleeping bag that is rated at a lower temperature rating than the conditions that you're likely to experience. This is why it's important to look at the details of those spec sheets when you're making your decision. You know, dive into those spec sheets. I know that within our gear shop, we put a lot of time and effort into building out the spec sheets and the descriptions. Those are worth looking at because there's little details in there that I think are really going to help you find the best piece of equipment for you. And we definitely do put a bunch of time and effort into that. Here's an interesting little tidbit, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, but I wanted to touch on it. So the shape of the sleeping bag can affect not only the weight. I think people look at a mummy bag and they think the reason for a mummy bag is because it shaves off weight because it's got that more narrow shape at the foot box. There's some truth to that. It definitely does shave some weight, but it also is going to help you retain warmth, which I don't think I've heard a lot of people talk about unless you kind of dive into the details. But essentially what's going to keep you warm in a sleeping bag is the sleeping bag's ability to retain your body heat inside that bag. And if you've got a bunch of extra space within your bag, maybe the bag doesn't fit you. Maybe it's too long for you. Maybe you're a guy that's, you know, 5'2" and, you know, you've got a long sleeping bag, which is rated up to 6'6". It's a bunch of extra airspace inside that sleeping bag that your body heat is essentially dispersing out into, and you're not retaining it like you would if you had a sleeping bag that fit you better. That's why I think those mummy bags, beyond the weight savings, are important, because I actually think you sleep warmer in them. You want to have a sleeping bag that fits your body. Now, one thing I get asked a lot is, people will say, I'm an active sleeper. I like to move around a lot. I like a lot of extra room in my sleeping bag. I don't like to feel constricted. I get that, and that's totally understandable. But just realize, if that's the decision that you're making to buy a rectangular bag or a semi-rectangular shaped bag and not that mummy shape, you are probably giving up some body heat. You're probably going to sleep colder than you would in a mummy bag and in a bag that fits you better. So that's something to be aware of. I already kind of touched on this, but I probably should note it again. There typically are two sizes of sleeping bags that are sold. Most often you're going to have a regular size, which is going to be for people that are kind of under 6 foot. If you're a female out there and you're listening, I wonder how many female listeners I have. I bet not many. But if you're a female listening, they do make women specific bags, and those are ergonomically shaped to a woman's body. They're also slightly shorter so that you are fitting that bag better and retaining that heat. We also typically see a long size in most sleeping bags. So those are going to be bags that are up to 6'6". So most guys that are taller, and they do make an option. And like I said, buy the right size, because it's going to make a difference in how warm that bag sleeps. I get asked about temperature rating a lot, as far as like what people should buy. you know, I understand that not everybody can buy multiple sleeping bags or, you know, even needs to have any. So I get asked quite a bit, like, if you're going to buy one sleeping bag, what temperature rating should you buy? I would say that for 90% plus of Western big game hunters, I would recommend a 15 degree sleeping bag. It's kind of that middle of the road option. If you're on an early season antelope hunt or an early season deer hunt, you may end up having to open that zipper clear to the foot box to dump some heat. You may end up sleeping underneath that and open it up like a quilt so that you're not too hot. But 15 degrees is typically warm enough to get you into those third season rifle hunts in a state like Colorado. You're talking that November timeframe, kind of. You know, you might sleep cold if you're a cold sleeper, but I would say that a 15 degree sleeping bag is going to cover the breadth of 90% plus of the hunting that most people do in the West. And that's what I would suggest. I would say right in that window of 10 to 15 degrees, you buy that one bag and you're going to be able to use it for almost all the hunting that you're going to be able to do out West. I get asked about sleeping bag liners. So for those of you who might not know what I'm talking about, there are companies that make sleeping bag liners. Often they're a nylon or maybe even a silk. You know, those are really for people. I don't ever use one. It's just added weight that I don't want to pack. It is a good way to, you know, kind of keep your bag cleaner. So you're sleeping inside that liner inside your sleeping bag. It will add a few degrees of warmth. They also do make, you know, warmer sleeping bag liners that are fleece, kind of a fleecy, almost like pair of pajama pants, if you will. Not a big pajama pants wearer, but if if you guys do out there, you kind of know what I'm talking about. But they do make those, and those are going to add a few more degrees of warmth. Typically, liners aren't really to add warmth to your sleeping bag. They're mostly for people that have issues with kind of the way the inside bag of the feels on their skin. Some people don't like it. Some people prefer a nylon or kind of a silk liner. And, you know, they will keep your bag cleaner. I don't typically use them or recommend them. I get asked a lot about quilts. I own quilts. I've got a, Enlightened Equipment quilt. It's a 10 degree quilt. I should say it's marketed or sold as a 10 degree quilt. Western Mountaineering makes quilts, including the Astrolite, which we sell in our gear shop. I kind of jumped on the bandwagon of quilts when they first came out and got popular maybe 5-6 years ago. And I did that because, excuse me, I have to take a drink. I bought into the quilts because I thought it would be a good means of saving some weight. I like to elk hunt light and fast, and I thought a quilt would allow me the opportunity to sleep as warm and comfortably as I had done in a regular sleeping bag, but also allow me to shave, you know, 5-6 ounces over a traditional bag. I thought it was interesting. I met with the guys at Western Mountaineering at one of the first outdoor retailer shows that I went to. It's been a number of years ago, and they were kind of rolling out their first editions, the quilts that they make. And I remember talking to them about the Enlightened Equipment quilt that I'd bought. And, you know, I talked to them and said, yeah, I've got this 10 degree quilt. And they both kind of chuckled a little bit. You know, they weren't rude by any means, but I picked up on it. There was a slight smirk, I think, on their face. And I said, what do you think about quilts as far as like being able to sleep that warm and provide that much warmth? And I thought it was interesting. Kind of what they told me was they don't think that because of the way a quilt is shaped, you know, it's open in the back. Most of them don't have hoods in them. Some of them do have attachments where you can attach a hood, like a snap-on hood. But a traditional quilt, it's open in the back and it's got some tabs that'll go underneath your sleeping pad. And, you know, they kind of giggled a little bit, but basically what they told me was due to not necessarily the quality of the down or the amount of fill weight in those quilts. Mostly the reason that they just don't ever meet the, those low temperature ratings is because you're just losing too much body heat. And I walked away from that thinking, yeah, that makes sense because it is pretty open. You know, you've got the entire hood open. You really have no way to really cinch that down around your neck. So you're losing some body heat out the top of the quilt. And you're also definitely losing a fair amount of heat out the back of that where it's open up the back. And I just kind of took note of it and, you know, went out with my Enlightened Equipment 10 degree quilt and I tried it in some lower temperatures. And I could tell you, I slept really cold. I slept much colder than 10 degrees for sure. I just don't feel like quilts are warm enough for me. And I also don't think that they are comfortable. It feels like I just turn around in my sleeping bag at night, going from side to side or from my back to my side. I just don't feel like they are as comfortable as a full sleeping bag with a hood that I can zip up. And even though I know that the weight savings is kind of nice, I would say that 90% of the time I'm still going with a traditional down sleeping bag, full bag with a full hood. I just sleep a lot more comfortable. I'm a lot warmer. The only time I really dig in and use that quilt anymore is if I'm doing a July scouting trip or if I've got an antelope tag somewhere and I'm basically car camping and I'm just pretty much using that thing as a blanket. It's not to say that, you know, there are not people that don't love quilts. There certainly are. I'm just not one of them. I would much prefer a down sleeping bag. So that's kind of my take on quilts. And I wanted to touch on that and offer an opinion because I do get asked about a quilt quite a bit. I know that those weight savings are enticing, but my personal opinion, I just don't think that they're functional or comfortable enough to use. So with that, I'm going to run through just some real quick reviews, give you guys some ideas on what I think are probably some of the best options for sleeping bags if you're looking for one, and maybe just some notes about them. First, I'll throw up the Stone Glacier Chilcoot bag. They make that in a 0 degree and a 15 degree bag. I've got a 0 degree Chilcoot, and that's the bag I use for cold weather. The feedback I get from people that really love that bag, I'm talking the diehards that come back and tell me that's the best bag that they've ever had in their whole life. Those are typically guys that value comfort and extra space. They're really roomy. They're longer. They feel wider in the shoulder. To me, they feel wider through the hips and also the foot box. So if you're looking for like a comfortable sleeping bag that's warm, it's lofty, I would take a good look at that Stone Glacier Chilcoot. It's a really comfortable sleeping bag with some added room, in my opinion, for people that like a little bit of extra room. So if you're a broad shoulder guy, I would definitely say take a look at that bag. Western Mountaineering. We carry Western Mountaineering bags. Those have been, over the years, my favorite. I think they're the loftiest bag on the market. You know, maybe them and Feathered Friends, which are direct sales only. But from that landscape of sleeping bags that are available out there, I think that they've got the best quality down. I just think that those bags are so lofty. It's always fun when you pull that thing out of your compression sack when you get to camp, you throw it out, and you just watch that thing rise. I mean, the loft in there down is really impressive in my opinion. And really that's what you're paying for when you buy a Western Mountaineering sleeping bag. There's not a ton of bells and whistles. Most of them just have a basic side zip. They do have a neck baffle, which is kind of nice to keep those drafts from moving down into the body and the foot box of your sleeping bag. But really, there's not a lot as far as bells and whistles. They're just really high quality down sleeping bags. And in my opinion, they almost always meet their temperature ratings. They sleep warm. You know, I would suggest the VersaLite. I would take a hard look at that. That's a 10 degree rated bag. It's been my very favorite bag and I've used it on a ton of hunts throughout the West on a variety of locations and also temperatures. So I would take a hard look at that. It's one of my very favorites. They sell a lot of different options. We carry those in the gear shop. If you're looking for a 0 degree bag from them, take a look at the Kodiak. The amount of loft in that thing is incredible. It's really impressive. So take a look at those, but they are expensive. We do carry a couple other options. Peaks came out with their brand new sleeping bag last year. I thought it was really well thought out and designed. It's got some features within that sleeping bag I think are worth noting, one being the waterproof material in the foot box. So if you're using a floorless shelter, especially early season where you've got those wide temperature swings, you're going to get some condensation on the inside of your tent, and it's pretty common for you to bump up against the side of your tent with your foot box and get your feet wet in your sleeping bag and get that portion of your bag wet. So I thought that was really smart of them to look at a waterproof option in the foot box of that bag. Also the center zip is pretty unique in terms of sleeping bags. It makes it really easy to get in and out of. It's got a no snag zipper, which is nice. I spent some nights in the Peak sleeping bag. I think their down is top notch. I think it's well thought out, well designed. I think it fits really well. It sleeps warm. I would definitely say that they meet their temperature ratings on that sleeping bag. I will say, I'm just going to throw it out here. Don't hate me, Bryce. The center zip I thought was for me, but I'm not sure that it is entirely. And I'll let you hear me out. I hope you'll hear me out, I should say. I'm a side sleeper, and in temperatures where I feel like I need to dump a little extra body heat, like it's a little bit warm, I found that I will open that zip up, which is along the center of the bag, and I will roll onto my side so my shoulder is exposed. And I found that I'll wake up sometimes at night kind of cold, because it feels like I'm dumping more body heat because I'm laying on my side and I've got my arm and my shoulder exposed. And I feel like it sleeps a little bit colder at night, you know, after I've kind of woken up and the air settled and gotten cold, than I do with a side zip sleeping bag. Those side zip bags, I feel like I can regulate my temperature a little bit better. I feel like I can zip that thing as much as I want down the side. And I feel like I dump enough heat when it's kind of hot when I'm going to bed, and I still retain quite a bit of warmth in the middle of the night when that cold air is kind of settled. So I don't know for me if I'm totally sold on the center zip. I think it's really convenient in and out. I've had some times in the middle of the night where I had to pee real bad, and it was definitely handy for that. But as far as like regulating my body temperature, I don't know that I'm completely sold on it. And that's just some feedback, some critical feedback. And again, just my opinion. I know guys that absolutely love it. Brady absolutely loves it. But that's just my opinion and my thoughts and just food for thought. We do carry a couple brands, Marmot. So Marmot, I've already said, but that Marmot Helium, I think, is one of the best bags on the market for the money. I think on sale, you can find it right now in part of our Memorial Day sale. I think it's about $360. It's an 800 fill sleeping bag rated down to 15 degrees. I would highly suggest, if you're looking for a nice quality sleeping bag and you don't want to break a bank, I would take a good look at it. another option we carry in the Go Hunt Gear Shop is Rab. Rab is a British company, actually. And they make some nice sleeping bags. And I would say, if you're kind of looking for something different and maybe a little bit better price point than some of those really top tier brands, take a look at Rab, because they make a really lofty, warm sleeping bag. So I would suggest you take a look at those as well. I apologize. All this talking, I gotta get a drink. All right. So that kind of wraps up sleeping bags and my thoughts on it. You know, I've talked about pads and bags. If you guys have questions, don't hesitate to reach out. Hopefully I'm answering some of your questions as I go. Next one I'm going to jump down to is shelters. And shelters is probably, it's probably the most hotly debated or discussed among people. And that's the reason is because there's a lot of subjectivity in what people like and they prefer in a shelter. I kind of debated on how to present this or how to talk about it. And I thought I would try to take maybe more of a, you know, a 30,000 foot view and kind of touch on some generalities. I can't say that, around shelters. And, you know, maybe I'll touch on some specifics as I get down into the weeds, but, mostly I kind of want to approach this as like, what shelter do you pick and for what hunt and why? And just basically some like details, some things that I think are worth noting when it comes to shelters. So first, the one I wanted to kind of talk about and note is that I think tent makers, they tend to overestimate how many people can actually fit in any given shelter. And I think that's something you ought to be aware of. Once you add your gear and your weapon, you know, yourself or you and a buddy, and you got all your gear in there, that space gets pretty tight. So could you fit, you know, you could fit three people side by side in a tent that is touted as a three-person tent, but really only if you're super close with your hunting buddy or your partner. You know, those tents are really built for probably one person less than they advertise it for, if you really want to be comfortable in a tent. So if you look at a tent on the market, like a Big Agnes Tiger Wall 2, you can fit two people inside that tent, you know, sleeping side by side, and you can do it, but you probably ought to get along pretty good because you're going to be snug in there. Really, that's probably a better one person option, in my opinion, with gear. You know, in that case, you'll have room to put a lot of your gear inside your tent and then, you know, store your weapon in the vestibule. Almost said vegetable there. Must be getting hungry. But really, those tents, you want to be aware of it when you're buying a tent, that you probably really ought to be looking at an option that is advertised one size bigger than what you actually need. You know, maybe the only exception is like those tents that are advertised or marketed as a one person tent. I mean, those are really a one person tent. They will fit one people and your gear, in the vestibule, but you know, above and beyond that, two person shelter, it's probably best suited for one person in gear. Three person shelter, it's probably best suited for two people in gear. So that's something you want to be aware of. The second thing I think you ought to be aware of or think about is the time of year that you're hunting and where you're hunting. And this is probably the biggest factor in picking a shelter. So the time of year and the season you're hunting, it should be considered. And this is pretty much normally when I get into a discussion about floorless shelters or a traditional double-walled freestanding tent that most of us are familiar with. So at this point, I think I'm going to dive into talking about floorless shelters, when you might choose that versus a traditional freestanding double walled tent. First up for floorless shelters, I would argue that floorless shelters should be used in conjunction with the stove. I really think that's their primary purpose. I think that's the reason that they were primarily built. I think people were looking for an opportunity to go backpacking late into the season, where historically you probably couldn't because you just couldn't stay warm enough in some of those late seasons. And I think people were looking for ways to kind of solve that problem. So they thought, hey, let's build a floorless shelter. Let's add a lightweight backpackable titanium stove that you can put together. And you can essentially heat that thing up and have a hot tent combo. And I think that they make sense, you know, for late season. And I would really argue that their primary and best use is probably late season. Now, some people may use those on early season hunts when maybe weight savings and mobility. So the ability to quickly pull that thing down in the morning and throw it in your pack and get going are kind of a value prop for you. You know, those floorless shelters, they do weigh less. That's another, you know, major benefit of those, because you're not packing the internal portion of a tent. They don't have a floor. They're basically just a canopy, like a rain shell. So you're definitely cutting weight. That's why I think they're great for mobility and, you know, moving light and fast. But really the reason I'm not completely sold on floorless shelters for early season hunting is they just aren't that great with condensation. Typically those floorless shelters, they build up condensation because you just don't have that dead air space that exists between the mesh lining of a traditional shelter and then the rain fly. Kind of that dead air space is really, it's really critical in basically kind of cutting down on the condensation. You might have some on the inside of the rain fly, but you very rarely have any on the inside of the actual tent itself. Whereas a floorless shelter on an early season hunt, when those temperatures are varying vastly, so you might go to bed and it might get down into the, you know, the 30s or even the high 20s, and you might have 70 degree days. Those days where those temperature swings are really wide, it's also not super uncommon to have those afternoon thunderstorms in the high country during those early season hunts, where you get that moisture in the ground. And as it heats up through the day, that's really where they start to build that condensation. And those floorless single wall shelters are really bad for building condensation. That's been one of the biggest reasons I don't necessarily prefer them for early season hunts. That's a big reason why. Another reason that I don't know if floorless shelter is the best option for an early season hunt is that you've got that gap between between the ground and the actual, you know, tent itself. So you're lacking that protection from things like mosquitoes. I've definitely been on some hunts where I've used this type of shelter and I've gotten eaten alive by mosquitoes. It's not fun. You know, people that have issues or fears of, you know, snakes, creepy crawlies crawling in underneath, it's definitely not going to protect you from that. Really, they do offer weight savings, and you know, I can see that, and you know, I can see that being an argument. They are relatively simple to pitch. A lot of those you can pitch with a couple of trekking poles or even a single center pole if they're the teepee style. They're quick and they're convenient going in and out of, and it's nice that you don't have to take your boots off. I certainly see that, but I really would make the argument that if you're hunting early season, there's probably a better option, in my opinion. I really think the strength in a floorless shelter is when it's used in conjunction with a stove. I know I'm going to get some kickback on that. I know there's guys out there that are diehard floorless teepee style shelters for early season huntings, but if you can make a case, I'd love to hear it. I'm going to jump over to floored shelters. So, you know, traditional freestanding double wall style shelters. A nice thing is, and really one of the biggest benefits is that it keeps you and your things up off the bare ground. It's going to keep any kind of bugs or snakes out. It's a whole lot better, as I already explained, in keeping condensation down because you do have that dead airspace between the actual tent itself and the rainfly. There's also just a kind of a sense of a home away from home with a traditional style tent. And it sounds funny. You know, I don't know how old you are when you kind of completely ditch and abandon that fear of the dark. But, you know, even with all the nights that I've spent out in the woods, there are those nights where you go to bed and, you know, it's dark. You're out there alone. You may be in an area that you're totally unfamiliar with. It's a little unnerving. Not to say that I'm scared or scared of the dark by any means, because I'm not, but it is a little unnerving. And I will say that like a traditional freestanding shelter, it does offer you a little bit better feeling of kind of having a home away from home. It just does feel more secure. And I don't know, that's something worth considering. I mean, it sounds silly, but if choosing a shelter that makes you feel more secure and comfortable at night, just for the space that it provides, that little shelter, and it keeps you in the woods, I think it's worth thinking about, and I think it's worth buying, because ultimately that's what we're trying to do, is stay out there as long as we can and until we find success. So that's a little tidbit and a little positive. If there's a con or a negative to freestanding shelters, it's going to be that they're a little bit heavier just because of the material that's used. You've got an internal tent, you've got a bathtub style floor, you've got tent poles, tent stakes, and all that kind of adds up, and they are heavier. So, you know, that's something you want to think about. Might be worth packing the extra weight, like I already said, if it provides you that little bit of extra comfort, but it's definitely something you need to consider. So I wanted to jump into kind of like what I recommend. What do I recommend for an early season high country mule deer hunt? In my opinion, for this style of hunt, I think a double walled freestanding tent's a better option. Those afternoon thunderstorms are super common in the high country. You're most often camping in a location that is more exposed to the wind and rain. You're often camped maybe right at timberline or maybe even above timberline. It's way common to be more exposed when you're hunting high elevation mule deer spot and stock with a bow or a muzzleloader. And I think freestanding shelters with that rain fly and that inner tent, I think they're better at dealing with condensation. I think they're better in the wind than teepee style shelters. And I think they offer better rain protection because there's no gap in that thing. There's no gap at the bottom. If that rain gets blowing in sideways, it's not going to be coming in underneath your tent. So for those reasons, I personally think that if that's the style of hunt you're looking to go on, I think a freestanding double walled tent is a better option. If we dive into archery elk hunting, I think there's a couple of different ways to look at it. I think most traditional backpack style tents are currently light enough and easy enough to set up that you could take one and you could hunt either from that as a base camp, or you could use that in a more mobile style where you're putting it up and tearing it down every day and you're moving along with the elk or trying to get into elk. They are lightweight enough, and I think that's a possibility. I would also offer, and this is my favorite style, and it's probably the question I get asked the most about, is what is my preference for archery elk hunting? I kind of take a different approach. It's a little bit of a hybrid approach. My preference for archery elk hunting is to be mobile, stay on the go. I just had so much better luck when everything in the morning goes in my backpack. I throw that whole pack on, my entire camp, and I start out after the elk. And then at night, you know, hopefully I've had a close call in the afternoon, evening, just prior to dark. I just throw out my bivy sack. I throw my sleeping pad in it. I put my sleeping bag in it. And if the weather's not bad and it looks like it's not going to rain, I'm in bed literally in 5 minutes, less than 5 minutes, the time it takes me to blow my sleeping pad up. And I can sleep in a super small footprint. I've kicked out elk beds on the side of steep slopes. I've slept on the uphill side of big dead Douglas firs, where the sediment's kind of built up and it's offered a flat spot. That's one of the advantages of that style of camping and moving. And ideally, kind of what I'm looking for in hunting elk in this style is I'm trying to put myself in close enough proximity that I can be on elk relatively quickly as it's getting light in the morning. I'm not trying to camp so close that I'm going to bump elk out in the middle of the night. I definitely don't want to do that. So I'm trying to pick my location strategically, but I much prefer this style of hunting where I'm kind of actively moving day in and day out. I'm keeping up with the elk. If I'm not keeping up with elk, I'm moving into new country to find elk. And this has worked really well for me. I do pack a tarp. So for a lot of years, I packed a Rab Sil Tarp 2 version, which I believe is an 8x10. I most often pitch that in kind of a closed A-frame fashion. So I would use a single trekking pole in the middle. I would typically tie the one end off kind of in an A-frame fashion. And you know, if it looked like it was going to rain, I would slide my bivy down inside that, and it offered me enough room to throw my gear inside there and sleep inside it. And typically what I do is I'd sleep with my head in the end that's closed off. I would sleep with the foot box of my bivy sack kind of sticking out the end in case it did get any rain on it. It wasn't going to, you know, rain on my head. But I've used this style a lot over the years, and I can tell you, it may not be for everybody, because I know people, they like a base camp. They like going back to their tent. I just personally have found that I'm more successful when I hunt this style, and I feel fresher because I feel like I get more sleep at night. I'm not spending hours potentially hiking back to camp at night and then again in the morning out trying to find elk. I feel like I get more sleep. And really, that's what this entire podcast is about, is trying to get you the best possible sleep that you can get in the backcountry, because sleep is everything when you're back there. Like if you're not sleeping, you're not going to feel like getting up in the morning and going hunting. And really, if you're talking elk, mule deer, you know, whatever the species might be, those hours, you know, maybe 2-3 hours after light, and then, you know, that hour and a half before dark, that is prime time. I mean, that's precious. You want to be fresh and you want to be able to hunt as hard as you possibly can immediately after light and then right up to dark. And you want to get the best sleep that you can. So that's really why I've built my system out this way. You know, I could dive into other sleep systems or other types of tents and shelters. You know, certainly as you dive into those late season hunts, I've already kind of noted, but I think as you're moving into October, November timeframe, I think that's really where those floorless shelters start to shine. So if you've got a second or third rifle hunt planned in Colorado for elk or even mule deer, that's really where I think those floorless shelters have their place. I think those paired with a titanium backpackable stove, it makes a ton of sense. It allows you to sleep warm at night. It allows you to, you know, melt snow for water if you're in the high country and you can't find a water source. It allows you a little bit of boost in mood. There's really nothing better than being real cold and having a long day of hunting in November and coming back to your tent, firing up the stove and settling in and just hearing that fire crackle and pop and, you know, feel the heat come off that stove. There's really nothing better, in my opinion, for your mood during that time of year to have that stove burning on the inside of your shelter. So I think it's definitely great for that. It's also really nice as far as, you know, you don't have to worry about tracking mud in and out of your shelter because it's got no floor. Really handy for that. And the other thing is nice about those shelters is it really creates a lot more space internally. So a lot more space based on the weight ratio, I should say. So, you know, if you were to buy a 6-man full freestanding tent, I mean, that thing's probably going to weigh 30 pounds, whereas you can get a Seek Outside Red Cliff, you know, where you can sleep 4 guys pretty comfortably and your gear, you know, that thing, full system stove and the whole lot, you may be into it 7-8 pounds at the most. And you can split that between a few guys and, you know, each person packs their part and you're good to go. So weight savings is definitely, you know, worth thinking about in regards to those fuller shelters. And I really do believe that that's kind of their, that's where they shine. That's where I think their best use case scenario is. So I'm just going to wrap it up with some final take home notes. Weight, it's important to save weight where you can, but I don't think lighter is always better. Light is great if it meets the demands of the hunt that you're going on, if it meets the weather conditions and the terrain. I think it's great, but be aware that really your whole goal is to stay out there until you get the job done. And if your shelter is not providing you the protection, the comfort that you need, it doesn't really matter if it's lightweight, if you're not out there doing the thing that you're supposed to be doing. So if you got to pack a little bit of extra weight in a tent to keep you out there, keep you comfortable, keep you feeling, you know, mentally okay, you know, get what you need, even if it's a few extra ounces. Exposed landscapes. I've kind of already touched on this, but I think that, you know, if you're up above timberline, if you're out on the open prairie, you know, that badlands type country, I definitely think that a freestanding shelter is a better option. I don't think that these floorless shelters with the single teepee style post, I haven't had the best luck with them in the wind. When they're really exposed. And in my opinion, I think a freestanding tent, double wall, traditional tent is a better option for you. I should also say, I guess I haven't really talked about it, but it's probably worth noting at this point. When you look at tents, you'll often see that they're advertised as like a 3-season or a 4-season tent. And really the difference that you're looking at between a 3-season and a 4-season tent is the materials that are used. So a 4-season tent is going to have mostly more durable poles that can handle the snow load. So if you get into late season snows and it really starts to stack up, the poles within those tents are going to be able to handle that weight. They're also going to be better in the wind. Also the materials that those tents are made of are typically more heavy duty. So that's what the difference between a 3- and a 4-season tent. The 3-season, they're going to cut some weight. You're going to have poles that are not quite as durable, not quite as robust. And also the exterior portions of those tent, the rain flies, they're not going to be as thick and hardy. I would say that for most people, the hunting that you're doing, you're going to be just fine with a 3-season tent. There aren't that many people that are hunting late enough into the season in areas that are extreme enough that you probably need a 4-season tent. So just something to note. Here's a little quirk that I should throw in here. Side entry tents are better than single entry front entry tents. A side entry tent, specifically if it's got 2 sides, one on either side with a vestibule on either side, it's so much easier to get in and out of. If you're hunting with a hunting partner, you'll definitely appreciate having your own door and your own storage area out the door of each of your sides. So if you're looking at tents, I would suggest you take a look at those side entry options because they're better. They just are. Lastly, pick a shelter for the style of hunt you're doing. And What I mean by that is I think a lot of us look at a tent as just kind of a, you know, it's just something that we live in while we're out there, right? I look at a tent as a tool that's going to help me kill. If I need to post up and ride out storms in a high country mule deer hunt, I'm going to pick a shelter that provides me the protection to stay afield. I can think of an example. The thing that made me think of this is a few years ago, I had a group of mule deer bucks that I was hunting. And the location of these bucks, I could not figure out how to kill them. They would be kind of out in the open, but they would be moving towards heavy cover by early gray light. I mean, they were moving. And from the location that I was trying to hunt them from, I just could not figure out how I was ever going to get ahead of them. And I didn't think it was ever going to be possible to glass them up. I just hadn't been able to. The cover was just too thick. And I got to thinking, like, how am I going to actually, you know, kill these bucks? In essence, I had to figure out how to get over there. And what I ended up doing is just bivvying, just bivouacking out. So I just took a bivvy sack. I took a sleeping pad and a sleeping bag. I waited till it got dark. I got the wind in my favor based on where I thought they were at. Didn't want to bump them in the middle of the night, but I essentially put myself over in close enough proximity that as soon as I saw those deer in the morning, I ended up glassing them up for maybe 300, 400 yards. And I was muzzleloader hunting. And I ended up making a stalk on them as quickly as I possibly could. And even still, I barely beat them to timberline. Like, they had just kind of worked to the edge of it before I was able to kind of slow down my process and get within close enough range to actually shoot. And I ended up shooting this buck at maybe 110 yards. But really the key to killing that buck was shelter, like putting myself over into that country in a manner and with the right tool to be able to stay over there comfortably and put myself into a proximity that was close enough that I could make a move on those bucks before they actually hit timberline. So I would encourage you to look at your shelters as a tool. I've already kind of talked about how I hunt elk with a bow. I look at that setup as a tool. It's a set of gear that I use that puts me in a position very quickly every morning and most nights. I mean, it gives me the opportunity and the freedom to roam and put myself in close proximity to elk. I look at that shelter system as a tool in helping me be more successful. So I would encourage you, look at your hunts, look at the experience, look at the species that you're trying to hunt. Think about how you can use your shelter to help you be more successful. That's a point I wanted to throw in. With that, I'm an hour and 22 minutes in, which is hard to believe, but I want to run through some of my very favorite options as far as shelters go. And I'm not going to talk a ton about them, but I just want to note them. One of my very favorite shelters that I own and I use quite a bit is the Hilleberg Enon, which is just a one person tent. It's got a single hoop that goes up through the middle. It's got two guy outs that go on either end. The thing is excellent in the wind. It's great in the rain and the snow. It's super quick and easy to set up. It's not the lightest tent option as far as a one person tent goes, but it is super easy. It's a super low profile. It's very easy to set up. And I absolutely love that tent. I get a ton of use out of it. I've been using it more and more over the years. And I can't suggest it enough. It's definitely one of my favorite options and one of my favorite pieces of gear I bought. Also, the Hilleberg Rogan. If you're looking for a two-man tent, you got two entrances off either side. This is like kind of your traditional freestanding two-person tent, two vestibules. I would take a hard look at that Rogan. It's got a great weight-to-strength ratio. It's a really nice option. Stone Glacier, one of my very favorites, and this is kind of out of the box. It's really expensive. I'm not going to pull any bones or punches about it, but the Skyscraper six-person dome tent, it's hands down the best base camp style tent I've ever used. It does have a stove jack, which is really nice. It also has a floor that kind of clips in on the inside of that thing. I had some buddies that went to Alaska prior to when I went on a caribou hunt up there, and those guys took floorless teepee style shelters. And I have video of those guys just absolutely getting blown away in the wind. I mean, the wind's hitting the side of that teepee shelter and it is just beating the hell out of them. And when they came back, they said, you know, I would probably take a good look at a freestanding, you know, dome style shelter, which are kind of those shelters that you see if you've ever watched one of these documentaries on Everest. You know, that's kind of those big base camp style tents. That's kind of what the skyscraper six person looks like. And like I said, it takes a minute to set up. It's definitely not a tent that you're going to, you know, pack in the backcountry on your back. Maybe if you got a string of mules, it might be a nice option, to be honest. It's a great base camp though. So if you're looking at a hunt that's similar to like I did in Alaska on that caribou hunt, that would be my recommendation. It's a great tent, kind of out of the box and not one that probably a lot of people talk about, but I really love that tent. Also from Stone Glacier, I think for a solo, super lightweight, mobile option, I would take a good look at that Sky Air ULT. I'm not a huge fan of the front entrance. You got to kind of worm your way down into your sleeping bag. It's not my favorite, but it is super lightweight and it's easy to set up. And then just their skyscraper two-person tent, which is a true four-season tent. It's really hardy, well-built tent. The way that they've built that tent, it actually offers you a bit more headroom because it removes those walls kind of further out on each side and gives you option to sit up. It's a great tent to ride out a storm, sit up, read a book. You know, you can fit two people in it. It's a nice tent and I would say, you know, take a look at it. One of the ones that's kind of, you know, it's from kind of that outdoor rec crowd, but Big Agnes Tiger Wall, the UL2, I think that's a super nice shelter. And I think for a lot of people, that would be all the shelter that they need probably from all the way to August to maybe the middle of October. It's a three-season tent, but it is really lightweight. Really well-designed, well-built tent. You know, I set that thing up here. I'm trying to think, maybe it's probably been 5 or 6 years ago and played with it some. I was just genuinely really impressed at how well it did in the wind, how lightweight it was, and how comfortable it was. So I would say take a look at that Tiger Wall too if you're looking for like a freestanding tent. And it's lightweight enough, to be honest, that a guy could pack that on a solo hunt and, you know, it'd be the Taj Mahal for one guy. Moving down into some of the floorless shelters, you know, the Peak Solitude, I think, is really well thought out. I love the fact that you can use the trekking poles and the top end of that to create space and headroom and kind of push the sidewalls out away from your head at the top. It's also a really nice option to hang your gear at night if you need to dry it out in conjunction with a stove. I think those guys have put really good thought and effort into that tent, and it's a nice tent. It shows. I'm super excited to see those guys, what they've got coming. You know, new tarp. I love a new tarp. So I'm interested to see what those guys' new tarp looks like. So I would look for it in the future. Kind of the original to the floorless shelter, you know, maybe Kafaru was there before, but, you know, Seek Outside. Makes a nice floorless shelter and we've sold a ton of them. A lot of happy customers. I would say if you're looking at Seek Outside, I would look at the Cimarron. It's a lightweight, you know, three man, I would say, option, with wood. I would say two people is really comfortable with your gear inside that thing. It doesn't have the standing headroom that the Red Cliff has. So it's a little bit lower profile. It's probably a better lightweight backpacking option. Versus the Red Cliff, but it's a really nice little tent for, you know, two to three guys. The Red Cliff, which I noted on, I own that tent and I've used it a lot. I actually use it a lot as just a base camp, in timber. You know, it's fun to take my kids camping in that thing and use it in conjunction with the stove. We've roasted marshmallows on the inside of the thing, which has been fun. But you can pretty comfortably sleep four guys in that tent. You could sleep more. If you're not using the stove and you have a big pile of wood, you do have like a 6'10" standing height in the middle of that thing. So it's great to stand up in the morning and get dressed. And that's a really nice it's a really nice teepee style shelter, single wall shelter. So I would check that Red Cliff out. A couple other options from Seek Outside I think are interesting is the Silex, which is a one person option with the ability to use a stove. You know, not everybody wants to go backpack hunting with a buddy late season. A lot of guys want to do it solo, and I think that's a good option we're checking out. I also think the Guardian is a nice tent, so I'd take a look at it. Argali, we sell Argali tents. They make the Absorica 4 person and then the Selway 6. They make a nice tent, very similar in design to some of the other free, I keep saying freestanding, but some of the other, you know, single teepee style tents. They do sell Nest for those, which is kind of nice. And Brad's a good dude. He makes a good product. Everything that Brad builds, he's put thought into, and, you know, we get a lot of good feedback from their tents. So I would take a look at those if you're looking for a teepee style shelter. And then lastly, I'm just going to throw these in there because I don't know many companies, especially within our space, that sell this brand, but Hyperlite. Take a look at Hyperlite tents. That unbound two-person tent, use trekking poles to pitch that. It's got an inner nest. It's got a rain fly. That thing is super lightweight. I don't own one, but I definitely have envy. It looks like a really nice tent. Man, dive in and take a look at that. And then kind of on its heels for the guys that are single solo hunters, I would suggest maybe taking a look at the Mid One tent, which is a very pared down, slim version, one man option with a vestibule. So take a look at Hyperlite. Dyneema exteriors, super lightweight, kind of niche, kind of from that outdoor rec crowd, but I think they definitely have a use for guys that are chasing ounces and trying to get lightweight and still be functional. So that's it. Hour and a half in. I'm sure you guys have a bunch of more questions, but hopefully I covered some of the topics that you were interested in regards to shelters and sleep systems. Let me know if you got questions. You know, reach out. We have great people in the gear shop. Paul, that works in the front of the shop, that guy's a true gear nerd. He can answer questions. I can answer questions. But yeah, reach out if you got them. Don't hesitate. Be happy to help you guys with any recommendations that I can, and based on experience of having used a bunch of these. So yeah, with that, we're going to wrap up this episode. I'm going to run upstairs and probably jump in bed and get 2 or 3 hours of sleep before I drive to Vegas and jump on a plane to go to Alaska and hunt bears. So wish me luck, and I will catch you on the next one.